Friendship, according to Humphrey, Chapter 11, Study Buddies. Tabitha's mum looked like the usual kind of mum, even though Tabitha said she wasn't her real one. Tabitha called her Carol. "I've been looking forward to this all day," said Carol with a smile that showed she meant it. I liked her enthusiasm. "You'll have to show me how to take care of Humphrey. I've never had a hamster before." "It's a doddle," I squeaked. "Think Humphrey's trying to tell us something," Carol said. Smart lady. Once we were home, Carol put my cage on the table and made some hot chocolate. "How was your day?" she asked. Tabitha shrugged her shoulders, just like any other day. If only she knew. She opened her backpack and pulled out some papers. "I've got Matt's homework." Carol examined the paper. "Honey, this isn't yours. It belongs to somebody named Seth Stevenson." Tabitha grabbed the study guide. "We must have switched." She rummaged around in her backpack and pulled out another study guide. "Hang on, this one's mine." She showed Carol the study guide with her name on it. "Is this important?" asked Carol. "Very," said Tabitha. "Very, very, very." I couldn't help squeaking up. "Seth will need this. We better try to ring him," Carol said. It looked as if things were working out, according to my plan, but you can never be too sure with humans. Seth and his mum arrived the next morning. "Thank you for ringing," said Mrs. Stevenson. "Seth was in a panic when he couldn't find his homework. It took me a while to get your number. I finally called Mrs. Brisbane," Carol explained. "I'm sorry we've never met before. I didn't even know there was a new girl in the class," Seth's mum said. Seth and his mother, whose name is June, I found out, took off their coats, and Carol made hot chocolate again. "I'm so happy to see somebody from Tabitha's class," said Carol. "Did Tabitha get invited to Richie's birthday party?" June asked. Carol shook her head. "I'll ring his mum. She invited everyone in the class. But I'll bet she didn't know about Tabitha either." I'm sorry. No one called to welcome you. We'd love to have you at the parent-teacher meetings." Carol poured out the steaming hot chocolate. "I'd like that. I'm kind of new to the mother business." "Looks like you're off to a good start," said June. The two mothers moved to the living room, while Seth and Tabitha sat by my cage. Smiley the bear lay on the table. "Say, Humphrey," Seth greeted me. I spun on my wheel to show him I was happy to see him. "If Richie invites you to his party, will you go?" he asked Tabitha. "I don't know," she said. "Maybe." Seth rubbed his nose. "Well, if you do, could you leave Smiley at home?" Tabitha looked surprised. "Why?" Seth sighed. "Well, I know you're not weird, but the other kids think you are because of the bear. If you leave him at home, they'd know you're, you know, normal, like them. And they'd like you." Tabitha thought it over. "Are you going to be there?" "Sure. Richie says he's planned a cool surprise." Tabitha frowned. "I don't like surprises." "This'll be a good surprise, a great surprise," said Seth. Tabitha didn't answer right away. "Okay, if you'll be there, I'll come, and I'll leave Smiley at home." Seth looked relieved. "Great." They watched me spin on my wheel and talked about the maths test. After a while, Tabitha said, "The basketball game's on. Want to watch it?" The two of them raced out of the room and I didn't see them again for the rest of the afternoon. June went home, but Seth stayed and she picked him up later. I didn't care because I wasn't worried anymore. Tabitha left Smiley on the table next to my cage. He seemed to be smiling even more than usual. It looked as if a nice, shiny, silver friendship had begun. I felt warm inside all weekend, especially when Seth rang Tabitha on Sunday night to ask her some questions about maths. But it was cold, cold, cold on Monday. Shivering, quivering cold. It was even chillier if you were standing near Heidi and Gail. Even when she wasn't around, Heidi, Gail hardly ever giggled anymore. Then came Tuesday, the day of the big maths test. It was probably the quietest day of the year, as my classmates were very serious about this test. Kirk groaned a few times during the test. Seth got up three times to sharpen his pencil. Everyone seemed glad when it was over, especially me. Aldo was unusually quiet that night too. Instead of talking to me while he ate, he spent a lot of time writing in a big notebook. Sometimes he'd stop to stare at me, then go back to writing. It started to snow on Thursday. When the students got to class, they were all bundled up in heavy hats and scarves, and they all had red noses. A few of those noses were runny, I'm sorry to say. After class began, Mrs. Brisbane rubbed her hands together as if they were still cold. "I finished marking your maths tests," she announced. "Every single mark went up. Most of them a lot. I know how hard you've all worked, and I am proud of you. Now you can get back to preparing for the poetry festival." When she handed the tests back, there were sighs of relief this time, and not one groan. "Now I have a big surprise for you today. We're going to have a guest teacher." "Is that like a supply teacher?" asked Heidi. "Of course," Mrs. Brisbane reminded her to raise her hand. "No, he's coming in to teach one class. And many of you already know him. It's Aldo Amato. You mean my uncle Aldo?" asked Richie. "Yes, your uncle, Mr. Amato," said Mrs. Brisbane. And there he was at the door. Aldo had become Mr. Amato. He wore a white shirt, red waistcoat, dark trousers and a tartan tie. He looked almost as spiffy as Headmaster Morals, and his cleaning trolley was nowhere in sight. "Come in," Mrs. Brisbane said. "Thank you, Mrs. Brisbane," Aldo stammered. It might have been cold outside, but Aldo was sweating. "I was pretty nervous myself." He turned to the students and said, "Hello, everybody. I spent a lot of time in this classroom when you're not here, so it's nice to see real people sitting in these chairs for once. A good-looking group, I must say." A few students chuckled, and Aldo relaxed a little. "I was talking to my pal Humphrey the other night. I started thinking about what the world looks like from his point of view. I mean, here he is, a small animal in a room full of much larger animals, namely you." When everybody laughed, Aldo looked a lot more relaxed. "Anyway, Humphrey gave me a great idea for something we can all try today." "Who? Me? Gosh." Aldo held up a pencil. "Can anybody tell me what this is?" "A pencil," answered Heidi. "Oops, hands up, please," said Aldo. "Heidi's hand shot up." "Yes, ma'am," said Aldo. I was impressed. Mrs. Brisbane never called anybody ma'am. "It's a pencil," said Heidi. "Really? What do you think?" Aldo pointed at Pay Attention Art, who was staring up at the ceiling. Who, me? What?" Aldo walked towards Art, holding the pencil up. "I ask you, sir, what does this look like?" Mrs. Brisbane never called anyone sir either. "A pencil?" asked Art. Aldo stared at the pencil for a second. "I think you're right. But what does it look like to Humphrey?" Aldo asked. "To tell you the truth, I thought it looked like a pencil. But that clearly wasn't the answer Aldo wanted. He approached my cage and held the pencil up right in front of me, very close. What do you think Humphrey sees?" The class was quiet for a few seconds before hands began going up. Even Heidi remembered to raise her hand. Aldo picked Kirk this time. "He probably sees a big strip of yellow," he said. "I think you're right. What do you think?" Aldo pointed at Saya. "Maybe something grainy, like a yellow tree trunk," she said. "Yeah, if you look closely, you can see the texture." Aldo turned to me. "Right, Humph." "Whatever you say, Aldo," I squeaked. That sent Gail giggling until she caught Heidi's eye. Heidi made a face at her and Gail turned serious. "So today, we're going to look at the world from a Humphrey's eye point of view. Ready to start?" My classmates all smiled and nodded. Aldo opened a briefcase. I'd never seen that before and took out an envelope full of tiny squares that were open in the middle like picture frames. "These little squares will help us look at things more closely." Aldo must have spent a lot of time cutting out those 1-inch squares. He handed one to each student. Next, he took out all kinds of things from his briefcase and spread them on Mrs. Brisbane's desk. Coloured leaves, pieces of lettuce, tomato and broccoli, lemon peel, onion skin, heavy paper, a purple feather, pieces of bread, many interesting and yummy things. "I want you to draw what you see with your coloured pencils or crayons and answer a few questions," said Aldo. "Okay, you can start exploring now." Soon my friends were wandering around the room, examining things through their square inch. They were so busy. No one seemed to notice that Mr. Morals had slipped into the room. He and Mrs. Brisbane both watched Aldo. They were nodding and smiling. The kids were smiling too. "Ooh, you should see this," AJ yelled as he viewed his glove through the square. I was the only one who noticed that Saya went over to Tabitha and asked if she could borrow Smiley and study his fur. "He's not here," Tabitha answered. He's at home. You could have knocked me down with a feather. Well, while my friends looked at the world from a different point of view, I looked at Og. How did he see the world? His goofy eyes pointed in two different directions. Perhaps I look like two hamsters, or a much bigger hamster than I am. Maybe that's why he leapt at me that first night. It would take more than looking through a little square for me to figure out Og. After a while, Aldo asked the kids to return to their seats. What did you see? He asked them. They couldn't wait to share their discoveries. AJ said his gloves had a million little squares where the lines of yarn crisscrossed. Art's green leaf had a lot of yellow in it, and although it seemed smooth, when you saw it up close, it was covered with wrinkles. Og's green skin had black dots in it. According to Mandy, my beautiful golden fur was actually brown and white as well as yellow. And what did you learn? Asked Aldo. Gail raised her hand. That things look different when you look at them more closely. Aldo smiled broadly. Good. You learn to observe. He wrote the word on the board. And observation is what scientists do. Sometimes they use microscopes or telescopes to get a closer look. The more you observe, the more you learn. Today, you took a first step towards being a scientist. Wow, I never knew I was in a classroom full of scientists. The bell rang for break. As they hurried to get their coats, my classmates thanked Aldo one by one. Finally, no one was left except Aldo, Mrs. Brisbane, and Mr. Morrells, the headmaster. Excellent job, said Mrs. Brisbane. I wish you'd come back and get them excited over maths. Now, are you going to send in that application? Asked the headmaster. Aldo nodded. I'm going to do it. I'd like to add something to that application. A letter of recommendation, said Mrs. Brisbane. I thought Aldo would faint. Would you? I'd be proud to write one too, said Mr. Morrells. I can't thank you enough, said Aldo. Do me one favour, added the headmaster. When you graduate and are ready to start teaching, you come to Longfellow School first. Aldo shook his hand. I wouldn't go anywhere else, he said. Phew, that was a relief. I was sad, sad, sad when Ms. Mack left for Brazil. I'd be even sadder if Aldo left too. Tell me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. A Syrian proverb. Chapter 12. Party Hardy. That week, there was plenty of chatter about Richie's forthcoming birthday. All that excitement gave me a wiggle in my whiskers and a pounding in my heart. What was this big surprise Richie talked about all the time? On Friday, Mrs. Brisbane announced that Richie would be taking me home for the weekend. Yay! Humphrey's coming to the party too, AJ yelled. I'd never been to a party outside Room 26 before. Overjoyed, I jumped on my wheel and spun as fast as I could. Boing! Og croaked. Oops. I realised that Og had not been invited to the party. What about Og? Asked Richie. Can he come too? Mrs. Brisbane shook her head. I think you have all you can handle. Besides, I'm taking Og home with me. My husband is working on a surprise for him. Eek! I squeaked. It just slipped out. Mr. Brisbane, whom I hadn't even seen since Christmas, was working on a surprise for the frog. I could feel that green-eyed monster inside me again. I was jealous of a large lump with a ghastly grin, and I wasn't proud of myself. Richie was hopping from one foot to another like a frog by the time his mum came to pick us up after school. We're going to Party Hardy, Humphrey, he shouted. Try to relax, Richie, Mrs. Rinaldi told him as we got into the car. If we're going to have this party, you'll have to calm down. The Rinaldi house was in quite an uproar that night. First of all, there were so many aunts, uncles, grandmas and grandpas there, I wasn't sure which was which. Everyone was hustling around, moving chairs and putting up decorations in the basement, or bustling around the kitchen cooking. As busy as they were, they all managed to stop and say, Hi Humphrey, or isn't he a cutie? Uncle Aldo and his wife Maria came round to help. When Aldo announced he was starting college again, his relatives slapped him on the back and said, Way to go! They were as happy, happy, happy about it as I was. On Saturday morning, there was even more commotion as Richie's family hurried up and down the stairs, preparing for the party. Aldo and Maria came back to help. Early in the afternoon, Aldo put on a top hat and picked up my cage. OK, Humph, time for us to party on, He carried my cage downstairs to the basement. What sights I saw there! The ceiling was covered with balloons of every colour. Along the walls were brightly coloured booths made out of big cardboard boxes. A circle of chairs surrounded a large platform. Happy circus music was playing, and I could smell popcorn and lemonade. Aldo put my cage on a big table and said, "Welcome to Richie Rinaldi's Crazy Carnival. Step right up, one and all." Soon my friends from room 26 made their way down the stairs. Gail and Heidi, not together of course, Kirk, Garth, Mandy, Sayer, AJ and Art, Miranda, Seth and Tabitha. As soon as Sayer saw Tabitha arrive, she hurried over to greet her. "Oh, I'm glad you came," she said. Then down the stairs came Marty. "Marty?" I blinked hard and looked again. Sure enough, Marty Bean, the guy who's really mean, was right there in Richie's basement. My mum made me invite him. I heard Richie tell Garth, "He's in my Sunday school class. There's school on Sunday too. You learn something new every day." The kids all put brightly wrapped presents on a table. Most of them said hello to me. And Aldo said, "Step right up and play the most amazing games on earth." Each of the booths along the wall featured a different activity. Richie's dad had a booth where the kids tossed rings as empty lemonade bottles. If 3 rings landed over the bottles, he got a pink ticket. Cousin Mark's booth featured a game where you threw a small basketball through a hoop. You got a pink ticket for each basket made. In Grandpa Rinaldi's booth, you had to knock down little bowling pins with a ball. If you knocked them all down, you got a pink ticket. Closest to me was Maria's booth. She had a flowered scarf on her head and a big glass ball in front of her. "Come and hear Madame Maria tell your fortune," she called to the crowd. Madame Maria told Mandy that in the future she would eat much popcorn. I think she already had. Then Maria told Kirk that in the future he would have lots of fun. Kirk always does. There was so much noise in Richie's basement I was tempted to go into my sleeping house for some peace and quiet, but I didn't want to miss any of the fun. Then, uh-oh, I noticed someone not having fun. Heidi Hopper was on her way to the basketball booth when Big Mean Bean stood in front of her, blocking her way. She moved to the right to go around him. Marty moved to the right and blocked her. "What's your hurry?" he asked in a nasty voice. Heidi moved to the left to go around him. Marty moved to the left and blocked her. "Say the magic word," said Marty in a soft voice. "Can't hear you. Please." Heidi spoke much louder now. Marty sneered. "That's not the magic word. Guess again." Once more, Heidi tried to go round him, and he stopped her. She was almost in tears. This was unspeakable behaviour. "Let her go," I yelled. Not that anyone could hear a small hamster over all the hubbub. Suddenly, Gail appeared out of nowhere. "Stop it, Marty," she said, and she pushed him out of the way. She grabbed Heidi's hand and pulled her towards the fortune-telling booth. "Come on, Heidi." Marty stood there with his mouth wide open. I could hardly believe it, what I'd seen myself. First of all, I thought Gail was angry as Heidi. Second of all, no younger kid had ever dared push Marty before, especially not a girl. "Gail's a lot stronger than she looks. Yoo-hoo, ladies. Fortune's told. Let Madame Maria tell you what your fortune will bring." Heidi and Gail looked at one another. "Step this way," Maria called to them. The two girls scurried over to her booth and sat down as Maria stared into the glass ball. "You'll be the best of friends forever," Maria predicted. "Hooray!" Heidi and Gail looked happy with their fortunes. As they walked away, I heard Gail say, "I'm sorry I said you were a cheat. I was wrong." "I'm sorry I called you a crybaby," said Heidi. They didn't seem to know what else to say until Mandy raced up and asked if they'd tried the ring toss yet. The 3 of them hurried to the booth. Those old gold friends, Heidi and Gail, were back together at last. Meanwhile, Marty seemed puzzled by the whole incident. He stood motionless, watching the other partygoers pairing off and having fun together. I guess Aldo was watching because he marched over and said to him, "If you need something to do, I could use some help giving out the prizes." Marty didn't answer. "Or would you rather be with your friends?" "You do have friends, don't you, Marty?" Marty stood like a statue, staring at Aldo. "You know, Marty, if you stop pushing everybody around, people might start liking you." So why don't you come over and do something nice, like handing out prizes? Hollow didn't wait for an answer. He put his hand on Marty's shoulder and marched him to the prize booth. Meanwhile, Richie and Seth cheered on Tabitha as she got three baskets in a row. Smiley the bear was nowhere in sight. After Miranda and Saya had each earned a handful of pink tickets, they headed for the prize booth. But when they saw Marty there, they stopped in their tracks. "I'm not going over there if he's there," said Miranda. "He'd probably steal my tickets." AJ and Art were already at the prize booth trying to choose from the assortment of little puzzles, paddles with balls attached, and funny cardboard glasses with eyeballs painted on them. Aldo and Marty stood behind the prize table. "Hurry up and take something," Marty said in a gruff voice. He tried to stuff the glasses into AJ's hands. "Move it along." Aldo nudged Marty. "Give them a chance to decide what they want, Marty," he suggested. "How about a train whistle?" he asked, holding up a big wooden whistle in the shape of a train. "Maybe," said AJ. "Paddleball is always good," said Art. "I'll take that." "Good choice," Marty mumbled. "I'll take the whistle," AJ decided. "Thanks." "You're welcome." Sounded strange to hear Marty Bean say those words. Kirk rushed to the prize booth with a handful of tickets. "Well, if it isn't Kirk the jerk..." Marty stopped himself before he finished. "Kirk the basketball king," said Aldo. "Pick a prize." Kirk had enough tickets to get a flower with a bulb attached that could squirt water. "Good choice," said Marty. His voice sounded different. Suppose he wasn't used to saying nice things. At last, Saya and Miranda, who had been watching Marty, finally came forward, clutching their prizes. "Ladies, come and get your prizes," said Aldo. "Marty will help you. He likes to help. Right, Marty?" "Here are some keychains," Marty told the girls as they nervously stepped forward. "Or maybe you'd like this noughts and crosses game." Miranda and Saya were obviously surprised that Marty was acting like a human being. He's supposed to act. But they handed over their tickets. "Thanks, Marty," said Miranda, taking the keychain. Aldo grinned. So did Marty. Everyone was having such a good time, I was tempted to open the lock that doesn't lock and join in the fun. While I was thinking it over, Aldo blew a whistle and asked everyone to come to the centre ring for the big show. As I watched my classmates rush for their chains, for their chairs, I realised I had an excellent hamster eye view of the centre of the ring. There was no need to plan an escape after all. Once everyone settled down, Aldo took centre stage and waved his top hat dramatically. "Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to be dazzled by the one, the only, Amazing Magic Mitch." Amazing Magic Mitch turned out to be a tall, skinny man, also wearing a top hat. His long blonde hair touched his shoulders. He had an oversized black jacket with a red and white striped t-shirt and wore huge red-rimmed glasses. Aldo applauded, and the rest of the audience joined in. Magic Mitch carried a table in one hand and a suitcase in the other. He put the suitcase on the table and pulled out a large black wand. Now I understood. Amazing Magic Mitch was a magician. I'd heard about magic shows, but I'd never seen one before. My whiskers started to quiver as the act began. He talked a whole lot. Talk first. He started out with a card trick. He brought AJ out of the audience and asked him to pick a card, memorise it and return it to the pack. The magician mixed up the cards and asked AJ to pick another card. The card AJ selected this time happened to be the exact card he'd picked the first time. "Think it's a card trick pack?" asked the magician. "Yes," AJ answered. So Magic Mitch called Tabitha out of the audience. He asked her and AJ to check the pack of cards to see everything was normal. It was. Then Tabitha had to pick a card and memorise it. Mitch shuffled the cards all round again. When Tabitha picked another card from the pack, you won't believe it. It was the exact same card she'd picked before. Everybody applauded except me. This fellow seemed a little too crafty for me. I decided to keep a close eye on him. Magic Mitch asked if he could borrow a coin from somebody. Marty volunteered. One he had in his pocket. Imagine a grown-up taking a coin from a kid. Mitch rolled the coin up into a handkerchief and it disappeared completely right before our eyes. He shook out the handkerchief, but the coin was gone. Marty gasped. Somebody should have warned Magic Mitch not to make Mean Bean angry. Magician leaned over and asked, "What's that in your ear?" He reached out to touch Marty's ear and produced the coin. The same one Marty had given him. "Now I ask you, how can a coin disappear into thin air and turn up into somebody's ear? This guy was cheating, cheating, cheating." Next, Magic Mitch had the nerve to ask if the birthday boy had any paper money for his birthday. Richie came up and gave the magician a brand new banknote. You won't believe what Magic Mitch did with the note. He folded it all up, took out a pair of scissors, and cut it into small pieces. That's the rudest thing I've ever seen. Even Og wouldn't do something like that. Richie's eyes were practically popping out of his head as Magic Mitch took the pieces of the note, put them in his fist, waved the magic wand. Nothing happened. "Oh, I forgot to say the magic words," he exclaimed. "Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you will see the money grow." This time, when he opened his hand, the banknote was back all in one piece again. Thank goodness, or I think Richie might have been pretty angry. Magic Mitch asked Sayer and Mandy to help him with a trick where he cut up the rope, did some hocus pocus, and returned it back into one piece. And Art helped him make a glass of water disappear into a handkerchief. I mean, a whole glass of water. "I would not invite this man to my house for supper, I can tell you." Everybody seemed to like the show, though. They gasped and clapped at everything he did. Finally announced the big moment. "Ladies and gentlemen, at this point in our show, I usually make a rabbit appear out of my hat. But today, my rabbit is on strike. So I'm going to borrow your class hamster for this amazing trick." It took me a few seconds to realise that the class hamster was me. Richie came over to my cage and gently picked me up, capped me in his hand. "Don't be scared, Humphrey. It's only a trick," he whispered. I knew that, but didn't want to be cut up into pieces or disappear into thin air. No wonder the rabbit went on strike. Since Humphrey is already here, I can't pull him out of my hat. So instead, I'll make him disappear into my hat. Magic Mitch first held his hat upside down so everyone could see and inspect it. Everyone agreed it appeared to be an ordinary hat. Mitch took me from Richie and put me inside the hat. It was dark, dark, dark inside, and I have to admit, I don't like dark places. As he dropped me down, he pulled something with his finger and I felt a secret compartment. And he fell into it. It was at the top of his hat. A false bottom came over my head. I was trapped inside a dark, scary space. I could hear Magic Mitch's muffled voice saying, "Abracadabra, Humphrey dear, I will make you disappear." "Whoa!" The magician turned his hat all the way over. Now I was lying on my back, feeling a little seasick. "Humphrey, where are you?" Magic Mitch called out. He shook the hat to show it was empty, except it wasn't. "Ooh!" I squeaked weakly as I bounced up and down, trapped in this stuffy cave. Guess nobody heard me, not even Magic Mitch. I could hear the sounds of kids gasping and shuffling around in their seats. "Where's Humphrey?" I heard AJ ask. "Beats me," said Magic Mitch. He turned the hat round and put it back onto his head. "Want to see another trick? Bring back Humphrey," Richie said in a voice as loud as AJ's. "Humphrey who?" asked the magician. He started to do another trick. I couldn't see what he was doing, since I was in complete dark. Well, if Magic Mitch wasn't going to do anything about getting out of that hat, I was going to have to do something for myself. When I squinted my eyes, I could see a pinpoint of light just above me. If I could see light, then there must be an opening there. I crouched in the little space, reached up, and with my paws I pushed, and I scratched, and I pushed some more. I may be small, but I'm strong for a hamster. I could hear Magic Mitch repeating, "Now you see it, now you don't. Which shell has the pea under it?" "Bring back Humphrey," more voices shouted, but Mitch ignored them. Now I could see a lot more light. The top of the hat was opening from all my pushing. There was a space barely big enough for me to squeeze through. I pushed myself up with all my might and popped right out of the top of the hat. I could see my friends from room 26, Richie's relatives and also Marty Bean, all staring up at me. Magic Mitch kept going even though no one paid attention to him. There was giggling, pointing, nudging, nodding. Giggling turned to chuckling, chortling, laughing and howling. "Now you see it, now you don't." Mitch sounded confused. "Everyone, are you paying attention?" I could hear my name being whispered around. I stood very tall as everyone stared at me. "Greetings, one and all," I squeaked as loudly as I could. This produced shrieks of laughter. I took a bow. The audience began to shout my name. They stamped their feet and clapped their hands as they chanted, "Hum free, hum free, hum free." "Okay," the magician sounded quite annoyed. "I'll bring him back." He took his hat off and there I was, eyeball to eyeball with Magic Mitch. He looked very pale. "What are you doing? You've ruined my whole show." "It's my show now," I squeaked to him. "Next time I'm bringing the rabbit," he said glumly. Nobody else heard him because all my friends continued to clap, stamp and cheer. Aldo quickly entered the ring and said, "Let's have a big round of applause for Magic Mitch." Mitch waved his magic hat, which now had a hole in the top, and hurried away from Richie's basement as fast as he could. The crowd kept applauding and cheering. I knew they were cheering for me. A friend is a present you give yourself. Robert Louis Stevenson, Scottish novelist and poet.